Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we are going to look back on the malice at the palace. We are going to talk about Carmelo Anthony getting himself a new gig. And we're going to continue our sideline series, conclude actually, with Joel Anderson of Slate. That's our series on college football booster culture. But first. Woo! That apparently was one hell of a weekend in Atlanta for Colin Kaepernick and the NFL. Now, this is the point that I will start with and we'll get to the rest later. But I think this very basic point is worth noting. The dude worked out, right? Teams were in a position to go see him work out if they wanted to. I understand that driving from Flowery Branch to Riverdale would be tricky, but if you really wanted to go see what this guy had, and if you were in town and somebody told you, look, and you were an NFL scout of any sort, and somebody said to you, hey, man, there's a dude that's working out down there, and he might be a legitimate NFL quarterback. Hey, man, everybody jumping in their cars. And they going. If somebody said to one of these cats, hey, man, my homeboy, he work at UPS, and he say they got a dude in there that be whipping them boxes around on a spot. Yeah, even a box. He can make a box spin, dog. You might want to go check him out, man. He be throwing a football around back in the parking lot behind the UPS. There's at least one person that's going to go down to the UPS and be like, show me what you got. Right? Because quarterbacks are so scarce. Like, you get this opportunity, you go check it out. You go see what it is, let alone a dude that actually has some measure of receipts. And 7 teams went to Charles Drew High School in Riverdale, and they went to go check Colin Kaepernick out. Now, here's what I take from that. Those aren't the people who are simply concerned with the show of this, right? Because so many other teams sent their guys back. Those are some people that actually think, hey, man, we might want to go see what it is that this dude here has to offer. And they went and checked it out. So, like, if you want to make the argument that Kaepernick ruined himself by doing this, I'm not nearly as sure of that. If everything the way it shook out ruined Kaepernick, then that meant that thing didn't have no chance at the very beginning. That's the argument that I'll make. And I'm going to start there, but then let's go back around to how this went and how you wound up in this situation where Kaepernick was working out in Riverdale after he was supposed to work out in Hall County at the Falcons facility, right? Basically, by all accounts, okay, and some of this is things I've called on, some of this is things I've read, but by pretty much all accounts, out of nowhere, Roger Goodell pops up and is like, yo, gonna schedule a workout for Kaepernick on Saturday. Saturday. Let Kaepernick's people tell it. They were finding out all these details and all this information at the same time as we were. Like, let them tell it. This didn't come down from some call from the NFL being like, yo, let's go set this up. They put this out in the news and then hit Kaepernick's people up and like, yo, so what you think? Right? And they were like, yo, we think that's a little bit soon and we think that Tuesday would be a better day. They're like, okay, cool. But the workout's going to be on Saturday. This Saturday. Couldn't even be no other Saturday. Gotta be this Saturday. This is the day that we're able to do this. You coming or not? Now, under those circumstances, if you're Kaepernick, I feel like you got two options there. One of them is to try to negotiate this thing out on the front end, right? Before you agree to do it, try to negotiate it out and get every I dotted and every T crossed. But you're dealing with people that are already trying to squeeze you on time. So option two is to go ahead to say, all right, we'll go and then we'll work the details out later. That's what went on with Kaepernick. They're like, all right, cool. We'll go ahead and do this. But there were a lot of things along the way that had to be figured out. And by the way, all those things, I think one would argue, were reasonable. You know, who's going to be the people catching these passes? Who's going to be the people running the workout? Who are going to be the people who are there? What is the media availability? Oh, okay, you're going to be filming this. Cool. Who else is going to be filming this? Can we film this, right? Like, all these things, I think every single one of those questions was relevant, right? And so the camera question is a very interesting one, and the media one, both of those. And that's a matter of transparency. And what you got is Kaepernick does not trust the NFL. For whatever it's worth, I think the NFL was operating on this in a way that indicated that they did not trust Kaepernick too much. And this is the big reason why I say that. I say that because it's very, very difficult for me to believe that if there was a team that was interested in working Kaepernick out, but they didn't want the world to find out, I find it hard to believe that you couldn't get that done. right? Like, this is a dude that wants to be back in the league, right? I think this was demonstrated over the weekend. A dude that's in shape, a dude that's doing all the working out and everything else. He wants to be back playing quarterback in the NFL. Okay, cool. I feel like if you go tell that dude, look, it's this simple. Any shenanigans, and this ain't gonna happen. The second anybody finds out about this, it's done. If Kawhi Leonard was able to impose that upon the Los Angeles Clippers, I have a hard time believing that the NFL couldn't impose that upon Colin Kaepernick. Because ultimately, no matter how antagonistic the relationship between these two sides are, where we stand presently, the NFL has what Kaepernick wants, which is the jobs. So I think that they probably could have leaned in. I think they probably could have flexed a little bit and kept that thing quiet. I think that was an option that they had. Somebody could have pulled that off. But instead, it turned into this big, giant thing. So if you're Kaepernick and all this happens and it pops up in the news and you start hearing about it and everything else, and it's people that you don't trust on the front end, to be honest, people that we don't trust neither. You're like, oh, wait, man, I don't really so much know about this. So I was walking around the office yesterday, and someone, you could probably guess who it is, but whatever. He looks at me and he says, you know what this was, right? I'm like, what's up? He's like, it's Jackie Robinson's workout with the Boston Red Sox. And famously, Jackie Robinson had a workout with the Boston Red Sox before he wound up getting a workout with the Dodgers that made everything happen. But he famously had that workout. But nobody was there but the Red Sox. And they put out the word that the workout was terrible. Was the workout terrible? Who's to say? Who knows, right? The only people saying the workout is terrible was the Major League Baseball franchise with the longest standing reputation for racism. I'm not going to argue with you about how racist they were or were not. I'm just going to talk to you about the reputation of the team that, if I'm not mistaken, was the last in the American League to integrate. But anyway, you know, just letting you know. So, yeah, if you're Kaepernick's people, yo, somebody else has to see this. Because if nobody's there to see it but NFL people, and then they put it out there, yo, my man really stunk it up, right? He looked like he wasn't in shape. He looked like he didn't take this seriously and everything else. Then it's done. So, okay, they're like, yo, we need some cameras here in order to film this. NFL, nah. We're not going for that. Okay. If you're Kaepernick's people, I don't really think that's something that you could really abide by because the stakes are too high. You've got to have some measure of protection in this. If what you want is a job, you need that level of protection. The next part of this, of course, is the waiver. And so apparently at the last second, the NFL puts the waiver in front of Kaepernick that is not the standard waiver. Pro Football Talk has put out the waiver and put it out in comparison to a standard waiver. It's not the standard waiver. We've seen a lot of lawyers chime in on Twitter about this and say that this is not something that I would advise my client to sign. In fact, we have people go so far as to say that it would be malpractice if a client were to sign that release under these circumstances. It would be silly to do that. And so the dude looks up and is like, nope, I'm not going to sign this waiver. And then the whole thing falls apart at that point. There's too much. So then what happens after that is 1 hour and change later, there's a workout at a high school. Now, my understanding, how's this workout at the high school come together? It's pretty simple. Kaepernick had been in Atlanta a couple weeks ago to do the Know Your Rights camp, right? It was coming down to whether they were going to go to Detroit or they were going to go to Atlanta to do it. They decided to do it in Atlanta. While there, they met some people, obviously. Okay, cool. They meet some folks while they're there in Atlanta. And while they're on the phone, as this whole thing is falling apart, trying to find some place where there's a facility, they met somebody who had access and could get them in on this field at this high school in Riverdale. Keep it in mind, I said this came through the Know Your Rights stuff. I was at the office and somebody was talking about, wow, you know, I wonder why it was he couldn't find a location that was a little closer to where they were because people had to drive so far to get to it. And I was like, oh, that's very simple. If you know anything about Atlanta, it's more likely Colin Kaepernick could find a sympathetic ear in Riverdale than it is that he could find one in Hall County, right? And that's what wound up happening. And according to Kaepernick's people, it even went like a step further in terms of the difficulty of getting the space for somebody who was involved in providing access to like fields and stuff like that, to like athletic facilities for that school district was like, nah, no thanks. That call had to go up to the superintendent of schools who was then like, nah, go ahead and let them through, right? And so then they had the facility in order to do the workout, right? That's where it was. So laying all that out as a kind of truncated timeline here, I do that simply to say I don't feel like those are the actions of somebody who did not want to show the NFL what he had. Now, I think some people are trying to make the argument that Kaepernick wanted to at once show that he was able to play, but also keep himself out of, like, going to play in the NFL, right? Like, not making a deal with the man, I suppose, is kind of the thought process that you wind up with on that one. And nah, man, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. Because one thing Colin Kaepernick is, as of now, if you're not at the things that he does, is that he's invisible. Like, there's not really much value in being an activist whom people don't see. And he gets work done. He does things. I'm not saying that he's not doing anything at all. I'm just saying it's hard to make the argument that what he wants would not be advanced by having the platform of being an NFL quarterback, because he is an NFL quarterback. That's the whole basis. The dude clearly wants to be an NFL quarterback. He has demonstrated more interest in being an NFL quarterback than the NFL has demonstrated interest in him being an NFL quarterback. He's put into work there. And this is what he had to say after the workout along those lines.
Our biggest thing with everything today was making sure we had transparency in what went on. We weren't getting that elsewhere, so we came out here. It's important that y'all are here. Y'all been attacked for the last 3 years. Y'all continue to be attacked. We appreciate what y'all do. We appreciate you being here today. We appreciate the work you do for the people and telling the truth. That's what we want in everything. I've been ready for 3 years. I've been denied for 3 years. We all know why I came out here, showed it today in front of everybody. We have nothing to hide. So we're waiting for the 32 owners, the 32 teams, Roger Goodell, all of them to stop running. Stop running from the truth. Stop running from the people.
Now that sound is interesting because, I mean, that's a dude that's clearly just wildly frustrated. Like, Gabe, can you imagine what it was after that whole day of everything that went on? Can you imagine, like, going through all that stuff and then actually having to do the workout?
And then actually having to talk to people after the fact.
Here's the other thing, too. Who are the people who are there? We keep saying we. The people who are there are supporters, right? Like, the people who are there are that invested in what happens with him. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed this, at the Falcons facility, you know, the NFL is also afraid of what the backlash and reaction is going to be and all of that. In Hall County, Georgia, right? Like, you guys are, like, if the NFL is afraid of all this stuff and, like, Trump tweeting about it, those are the people voting for Trump out there. Like, you can go look up the numbers. There were two people there in opposition of Kaepernick and 20 people there who supported him. A bunch of Kappas. And it was two people on the other side. When you get down to Riverdale, it's a bunch of people there who supported him. As much as people talk about they don't want to invite the circus, there wasn't a circus. That dude had fans, right? Like, this was not a dude that was there and all of a sudden people didn't want it to happen. There were more fans there than anybody else. Like, this is not an indication of the circus that comes with him. This was an indication of the circus that comes from the NFL. And the tricky thing with the NFL, and I've been saying this for a long time, and I'm still holding to this, and I don't blame people who disagree with me on this, but this is just kind of informed by my experience in working in business stuff, right? What often looks like malice can be incompetence. And the NFL has demonstrated they're not good at doing stuff. Right? I don't even know how they just got something that's so easy to sell. But they're not good at doing stuff. Doing stuff, like putting stuff together, making it happen. Like, let me tell you something about the NCAA. Here is one thing that everybody who is around the NCAA says, no matter how harsh a critic they are of the organization, they are good at doing stuff. And what I mean by doing stuff is like putting on events, right? Like, NCAA need to make something happen in a couple weeks as far as an event. NCAA gonna make it happen, right? Like, the NCAA makes that stuff happen. The NFL, they are not good at doing stuff. And somebody decided in less than a week's notice, we about to do this thing, this giant thing with all these eyeballs on it. And the decision seems to have been made unilaterally by the commissioner. So now this trickles down to all these different people who have their own agenda. And there ain't but so much that the commissioner could keep up with at one time. And I think that in the end, what you wound up with was this great big old jumble. Now, along the way, in all the chains of command and everything for the NFL, are there people who would work in opposition of Colin Kaepernick? Yeah, there probably are. Do I think that one of them would probably be legal counsel Jeff Pash, who I would assume is responsible for the waiver that was sent out? Yeah, he would be one of them. But it's a tricky thing for me to use the broad term NFL because we got to identify what the NFL is. Is the NFL Roger Goodell? Not really. He is the commissioner, but his actions do not constitute the actions of the NFL. Jeff Pasch's actions do not necessarily constitute the actions of the NFL. The owners in this case, there are 32 of them. There is no consensus that we know of from them as it relates to this. We're not in a position to just broadly say NFL. And so I do think, from people I've talked to, that Roger Goodell wants Colin Kaepernick to be back in the NFL. I've had multiple people who know these things tell me that. I do believe that that is what he wants. I don't think he has any idea how to make that happen. Because if he did, this would have happened well before. He's clueless. He's Raj, man. You've seen Raj do other stuff. Raj don't know what he's doing. I don't think, by the way, that Raj wants Colin back in the league for any noble reasons either. I think that he is worried about his reputation and how history will view him as having this on his ledger. I don't think he wants that. Not as the son of his father. I don't think he wants that, right? Like, I do think that he has an interest in trying to make this happen. I don't think he got any idea how to do it. Any idea whatsoever. But that doesn't mean that Kaepernick should be trusting the intentions of what's coming from him. Because it all just looks like the NFL, and the NFL has long had a credibility problem. And what I've been telling y'all for years about credibility. Credibility like insurance. You don't need it till you need it, right? Like, now you are in a terrible car accident, right? Now you need insurance. You can ride around all this other time, driving reckless, not getting in no trouble, getting tickets, whatever it is. It's cool. You didn't have no insurance. Didn't matter. Nothing really happened. Now you in a situation. Now you need that insurance. Now you need that credibility. Now you need some people to believe you. And they don't. And they shouldn't. Cannot blame them for a moment for trying to take every measure of protection going into this. What I don't understand from people who observe this is, how could you have any problem with somebody looking to protect themselves under these circumstances? How could you have any problem with one man going up against one of the most powerful institutions in this country, looking out for self? Like I don't get that. Is the only way that you demonstrate that you want to play in the NFL by just like offering total fealty to the league? Like, is that the only way that you can do that? Because that seems to be a silly thing to request. That seems to be a preposterous thing, at least to me, for people to bring up. Like, that's just wild to me. And so I can't knock this man for that. I can't. And look, there are things that I would not do. I would not do this workout in a Kunta Kinte t-shirt. It is ultimately a job interview, nonetheless. That, to me, if I really want the job, I'm wearing that t-shirt after I get the gig. That's how I see it, right? Like that's me. But here's the thing about it. It ain't even get to a point with this that even mattered. NFL shut down the whole damn workout, right? It didn't get to a point where what he wore mattered. Like, if he had walked into the Falcons facility and everything was a go, and then they were like, yo, take off that shirt, we'd be talking about something different. Or if it got there and then the teams were like, yeah, you know, he wore that shirt. But it wasn't that. You know what else I haven't seen yet? And you tell me what you think about this. Gabe, have you seen any leaks from the teams who were actually there about what they thought?
I didn't see a damn thing.
Yo, isn't that crazy? Like, there were people there. We haven't heard anything from the teams, really, about why they were there. Like, we've seen a few scattered things, like Pete Carroll talking about it and stuff. But, like, of the teams that were actually there, it's kind of wild that I don't feel like we've seen any report about, like, from them, what exactly they were there for, what they saw, what their interest is. You would think that the media surrounding those teams would be pressing on those matters. We haven't really seen any of that come as a result. And if there's anything that reinforces the idea that this whole thing was just a farce, it would be that, right? Like, if you are any of these teams, Washington, for example, yo, I got all the questions about why they're there. Tell me more. I'm very curious about you. What do you see in this? Is this a reflection of some skepticism that you have in the quarterback that you took in the first round last year? Do you think that he could be perhaps some sort of mentor? Does that speak somehow to maybe what kind of coach you might want to hire and what kind of offense you want to run? Like, there are a lot of really interesting questions that come from that, and that's just one team. That's just one team. Kansas City sending somebody makes perfect sense. Kaepernick would be a fantastic backup for Patrick Mahomes. That offense and Kaepernick's arm and mobility? Yo, that would be great. All these questions. I haven't heard much of anything about this stuff subsequent to that. Like I haven't seen it. And I know that what I'm talking about right now is just kind of all over the place here. But there's so many things that are going on here. But fundamentally, what it boils down to is the dude did a workout. He looked to be an NFL caliber athlete, an NFL caliber player. We're running out of excuses for saying why it is that he's not in the NFL. Remember, people said he'd be too much of a circus if he showed up. He did this workout, and the only circus was created by the NFL. Does the dude really want to play? They went through everything to find that facility to still ultimately put on a workout. Is he in shape? Has he been preparing? That question was answered. Is he still there physically? That question was answered. Everything you've got on the whole Colin don't really want to play or why it is that Colin doesn't want to play, turn on your television. Go look at the quarterbacks this year that are dominating. Go look at their skill sets. Go look at the ways that they got the jobs. All the stuff about you can't have a backup that don't play like everybody else. Go look at Lamar Jackson, right? We don't, you know, teams aren't running like zone read type stuff anymore. Go look at who's there. They're still doing it. Every argument that you had for why the dude is not in the league is going away. So what you going to reach for now? A t-shirt? That's what you got? In a league where quarterbacks are this hard to find, you still got to go back and reach for a t-shirt? All that stuff fell apart. What stood was an NFL player. Why is he not in the NFL? If you're trying to stop and take some time to come up with a reason why that is, ask yourself why you want to make up excuses for somebody else. Because you're running out. You're done here. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about Carmelo Anthony coming back to the NBA. But first, gotta say, I love Bowling Branch sheets. They're comfortable. They feel good when you're in them. They're the softest and most comfortable sheets in the world and only bedding loved by three U.S. presidents. Now, for a limited time, you can get their luxury flannel bedding to keep you cool sleepers warm and because they breathe to keep you warm sleepers cool. Shipping is always free. You can try them out for 30 nights risk-free. And right now, you get $50 off your first set of sheets at BowlingBranch.com with promo code Jones. Get $50 off at BowlingBranch.com, promo code Jones. B-O-L-L and Branch.com, code Jones. Hey, Gabe, did you know Carmelo Anthony's back in the league?
I was low-key amazed by that. That came out of nowhere, did it not?
Yo, he's going to the Blazers. You know, the Blazers are struggling, but I don't feel like this is the solution. Do you?
That is a knee-jerk reaction. Big time.
Yo, here's the thing for me, though, on Melo, okay? I hope he gets to go out with dignity. Like, that's the thing. I think that he has had enough of a career and has meant enough to this league that I hope he goes out with a measure of dignity. And for his own sake, if this is what he needs to achieve that measure of dignity, I hope he receives it. Like, I really, really do. But he is finished. Like, he can't guard anybody. Like, we saw that in the last stop he was here. Everybody's like, yeah, well, hopefully Carmelo can learn to reduce his game and fall in line with what is asked of him. He did that at the last two stops. All you guys who didn't want Melo taking all those mid-range jumpers, he stopped taking those mid-range jumpers, right? Go look at his three-point attempt rate. It is much higher than it was in his heyday. He's done the things that you've asked him to do. The problem isn't all your narrative, Carmelo, can you become this kind of player? The problem is he's finished. He just can't guard anybody. And so the bright side for him about going to Portland, and Gabe, I know this is going to sound wrong, but I still, at least ain't nobody really going to watch him over there.
Wow. Okay.
Like if it don't shade. go well. No, not even shade, man. It's just the truth. It ain't. Look, man. The last time we saw him play basketball, he didn't look like an NBA player. Simple as that. So if this is bad for him, at least it's gonna be they be playing them games late at night. People ain't really gonna be watching them. It's probably not gonna get that many minutes. You know, like. Good for you. Go work out the kinks in private, I suppose. Because if he goes over there and he balls, then we'll pay attention. You know, like if he's doing good. But if he's doing bad, nah, man, we don't need to watch that. I don't need to see, I mean, he's not my hero, but I don't need to see my heroes die. You can let me know after the fact. It's cool. That's it. Hopefully he can get like a one-day contract with the Knicks or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Retire as a Knick, because I guess we'll remember him as a Knick. Even though his best years were in Denver, we'll probably remember him as a Knick. Like, hey, tell me this, Gabe. This is something I just thought about with Melo. Is any team going to retire his number?
You don't think that the Knicks would retire his number? Because he certainly is not getting it retired in Denver.
Yeah, see, I don't think that he's up to the standard of jersey retirement for the Knicks. Now, you go look at the numbers they got hanging. I don't think he's up to that standard. I do think that he's up to the standard for Denver. Like, do they have beef? Like, I don't know, but I don't know if they're going to retire it. Like, I had the same kind of question that you did about that. I don't know if they're going to retire his number. And that would be wild if that happened. Like, the way that people have turned on Melo. My thing with Melo is we really like, Melo didn't change. We did. Like, the way that we value the volume scorer changed. And so our evaluation of Melo changed. But that didn't mean that Melo wasn't a monster, right? Melo played the game that people wanted him to play. Melo played the game that he was largely coached to play. The paradigm of basketball has changed a bit, but there is a value to me as a viewer, right? Like, I'm not talking about the value to a team and their performance. I'm talking about to me as a fan and consumer of basketball. There's a value of watching a dude that can just cook one-on-one. Watch a dude that can cook in a phone book. And Melo was that dude. Like, the thing I used to always love about watching Melo, for all the criticisms I've had of his game, the thing I always loved about Melo was Melo never used that dribble until he had to. Like, I could watch Melo hold the ball in that triple threat and jab step forever. Not even pump face, jab steps. Just while you there the whole time being like, yo, man, once he puts this on the ground, whenever he chooses to do it, I really ain't got no option here. And this is a dude that's like 6'8", 6'9". Like, I think we lose sight of the kind of game that he had at his size. And I think that there's a generation of people that are not really going to be able to appreciate a player like Melo because they're not going to grow up with an NBA that allowed for the particular type of spacing that made it such that having a guy that could just go get a bucket had a value, you know? So I think there's a lot of people, like, there are people who overvalue functionally what it is to have Melo. And I think then there are also people who undervalue, as someone who enjoys basketball, what it was to watch a dude like Melo. And also, do not forget, man, Melo's first year in the league, the Nuggets got like 20-something games better just on the basis of his presence. So for that reason, all those reasons, I hope that he can walk away in a dignified fashion. I truly do. You just let me know how it's going before I go check it out, okay? Do you remember how old you were with the Malice in the Palace?
14 years old.
Oh, man. So you don't have do you have the I remember where I was when the Malice at the Palace happened type feelings? I do. Have you ever heard me tell this story?
I have, but I think the people need to hear it.
We're going to tell it again. All right. So it is November 2004. I'm in the process of flunking out of graduate school. But I'm like fighting it, right? Like, I'm trying to give it the old college try. And so it's a Friday night and I am in my office in, not Gardner Hall, the one that's across the quad. Wow, it's been a while. Anyway, Haynes, sounds about right. I'm in my office, right? And I walk out, and my brother calls me. Actually, I was in Gardner. I was on the couch over there. Anyway, I walk out, and my brother calls me. And I'm like, yo, what's going on? He's like, yo, are you watching this? I'm like, what's going on? He's like, yo, man, they out here fighting the fans. I'm like, what are you talking about, right? And so I come out the door and I go to the left because Carroll Hall is to the left. And they got, it's the journalism schools over there at Carolina. And so they got a wall of televisions there. And so I'm standing outside looking at the TVs. And then the security dude let me in. Security dude let me in. And I just remember I'm on the phone with my brother and I'm looking at the screens and I'm like, ooh, ooh, ooh. Ooh-wee. Like, all I was doing was making noises. I could not believe it. I've never seen anything like this before. Never seen anything like that since. It was the wildest thing in the world. These cats was up there scrapping with the fans. And then my brother's telling me, he's like, yo, man, even like Bill Walton, all the guys on the broadcast, he's like, yo, they're killing the fans. Like, yo, the fans are out of control here. The fans went too far. All of this stuff, like, all that's going on. Bruh, I can't imagine, like, if it was the era of social media, we'd have just been hammering it out on the phone, you know, on the cell phones, rapping about it. But there wasn't no social media. So if you wanted to talk to your friends about it, you had to talk to them all one by one. One way or another, you had to talk to them all one by one. And you know what I did that night? I called just about every friend I ever had. I called the ones that were local. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I left, that's right, I left the office and I went to my homeboy's house. And I'm like, yo, you gotta watch this, right? Because I think I tried to call and couldn't get through. I'm like, oh, well, I guess that means I just gotta drive over there. Like, that's how serious this was to watch. And I drove over there and we watched it and I called people and I took calls. And then it got to be like 1 in the morning or something like that. Nobody else is awake. I couldn't call nobody anymore. except I could because I used to live in California, so I started calling people on the West Coast. It was like a family reunion when that thing happened. You had to call people and just be like, yo, did this really happen? And, of course, after that, right, and you can read this in the oral history that Jim Miller wrote about ESPN, somebody in the office was like, hey, guys, it's probably not good for business for us to advocate fighting the customers. And so the whole tenor of the coverage and everything else and the way the NBA handled it was all to let the fans know, don't you worry, guys, they're not going to come beat you up again, no matter how much you might deserve it, right? Like, everybody was just like, nah, this isn't good business. And I see the argument, right? They all decided to make that play, and then that whole thing turned around, and then everybody had to get all, like, morally and righteously indignant about it, and it was the most deplorable thing they've ever seen. Larry Brown, remember after that game, was like, I've never seen anything so terrible, even though Larry Brown started a fight that was so bad that the police had to come out in Carolina Duke 1962 and the cops was hitting people with that Mr. Do-Right and stepping on them and everything else. You know what I mean? And I really hate that it had to go in that direction because, yo, why can we not simply appreciate what in the world that was? That was just the most surreal thing I could possibly think of. It was a battle royal between the fans and the players. And you actually had fans who wanted the smoke. I mean, they didn't really want the smoke, but at least they thought it. And then there's that little drunk dude who got himself out there on the court. And I don't know what he was thinking before Jermaine O'Neal, a.k.a. M. Bison, hit him with that sliding head buster. Bow! Took him out. And I still contend, man, Jermaine O'Neal should not have been suspended. Security was slack on their job. That was something someone had to do. That's all I'm saying. Maybe it wasn't Jermaine O'Neal, but somebody had to do that job. You can make an argument for maybe suspending Steven Jackson, and you got your argument for Artest. Jermaine O'Neal, they should have put something extra in his check. He out here doing security's job for them, right? You know, it's hard enough being a professional athlete. Now you got to be out here doing that kind of job. That mean you got to sign another waiver? Nah, man, I never felt like he was in the wrong on that one. You know, it's just how I feel. I just never really saw that. But hey, man, I wonder also, like, kind of, because the outrage machine gets to humming. But Gabe, if that happened in another country, you know, nobody would be outraged. Like if somebody was like, yo, check out this clip from this game in Japan, do you think people would have watched it and been mortified?
You see that a little bit now with all of the racist stuff that's going on in Italy with soccer. It's not even really on the radar here. People don't seem to care.
Yeah, no, the anger was not like, it was very particular to who the people were. This was not something objectively that you would look at and just say, oh man, this is deplorable, right? If you had no investment to the parties involved, you would probably watch that and be like, yo, look at this. This is crazy. And it's a shame that people so invested in what was in the video because I want us all to just be able to look at it and be like, yo, this was crazy because it was crazy. And I feel like in the last 15 years, we've been in a position where we could do that, right? We've been there. I also recommend you check out Quiet Storm, the documentary on Ron Artest that Johnny Sweet did. There's a lot of really interesting stuff about the brawl and Artest and his relationship with Jermaine O'Neal. Like, I really think it's worth checking out just to kind of get some of that human context as I'm just here for the spectacle. And, of course, my favorite story, Steven Jackson has told this to a million people, but he told us this on Highly Questionable, and this is my favorite detail about the brawl, is that after this has happened, after Steven Jackson has got up in the crowd and taken some fans out, after Jermaine O'Neal has done this and the team is in the locker room and Ron Artest is looking around the room and Ron Artest says, you think we're going to get in trouble? Do you think we're going to get in trouble after you fought the fans? Again, why couldn't we just appreciate how Whiskey Tango Foxtrot that was? Instead, y'all wanted to be mad. All right, we'll be back to resume our sideline series with Joel Anderson of Slate. But first, holidays are here. This year, give yourself the gift of extra money in your pocket. Pay off your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Roll your high-interest credit card payments into just one payment at a lower fixed rate. LightStream's credit card consolidation loans have rates as low as 5.95% APR with autopay. You can save thousands in interest. Plus, there's absolutely no fees, no application fees, no origination fees, no transaction fees, no prepayment penalties. The application is so quick and easy, you can apply apply right from your phone. Because LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Now, just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is go to LightStream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Bomani for more information. All right, here we are. We are wrapping up our sideline series. We've done this in conjunction with Banner Society, talking about booster culture in college football. We've had Spencer Hall of Banner Society with us. We had Marcus Spears of ESPN, Stephen Godfrey of Banner Society. And now with us, a dude who once says he was the fastest 10-year-old in America.
I mean, there's an actual certificate that I can bring if you need proof.
Oh, you don't keep a copy with you?
You know what? I brought one to work one time because somebody tried to pull my card on it. And I brought it, and now I can't find it. So
you don't keep like a screen cap, like on your phone?
I should have done that.
So now it's gone. You can't find it.
Yeah, I don't know where it is. I moved like four times since I brought that to work.
How much did it hurt to lose it?
Oh, because like now people can just pull my card on it. You know what I mean?
Can you like put in an application and get a duplicate?
The funny thing is, I don't think that organization quite exists in the same way anymore. It's the USATF today, but back then it was called the Athletic Congress. Mm-hmm. So
you ought to call them.
I should see. Maybe I'm sure they got something.
Or at the very least, it's in the record books somewhere.
Yeah, I would hope so.
All right.
It should be.
Now, you also played college football.
Yes.
You played at TCU.
I did.
So what was your booster dealing with life at TCU?
Not at all. it's funny hearing Marcus and Steven and Spencer talk because I feel like I represent the common man, which is that, you know, there's a very small number of people that are 4 and 5 stars that, you know, are highly desired and everybody wants them. I'm more representative of the 0-star recruit in which, you know, you have to kind of, you know, cobble together interest in yourself and you have to reach out to people and hope that you can kind of get on. And that was sort of my experience.
And now you've covered college football. You're now doing a Slow Burn podcast at Slate. You know, we've talked about that. You guys go check that out. I wanted to talk to you about boosters as relate to getting them coaches out of there.
Yeah,
right? Because we
yeah.
just saw this happen with Willie Taggart.
Oh, man.
Where 1 week, the AD is like, well, basically, Willie got to get hit by a bus in yeah. order for us to fire him.
Yeah.
7 days later, or not even seven, yo, he got to go right now.
So let's just even, Willie Taggart donated money for a facility that is not yet done at
yes.
Florida State. They've been trying to raise the money.
Trying to get the money.
To build an indoor facility that would help. It's a competitive disadvantage for Florida State to not have this.
Right.
All of a sudden, they're able to raise the amount of, it was $18 million?
Yes.
For a buyout. All the money just materializes from nowhere. So it makes you wonder, like, hey, why couldn't Willie Taggart get the money that he needed when he needed it? But all of a sudden now, it's like, all right, we found $18 million. We found whatever, you know, would help go towards this indoor facility.
Well, you know, Florida State also has a very interesting situation in that their booster club and the athletic department basically merged.
Yeah.
Like, they're the same people. So when people are asking on this one, will boosters be involved in the hire? Of course, they're pretty much always involved in the hire.
Absolutely.
And by the way, ask Charlie Strong, if they're not involved in the hire, it's bad news.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, you need them, but also they could be the end of you. You
yes.
know what I mean? Right. Like, you want them, you need them to be involved in the process. You want to cultivate them and have relationships with them, but there's only so much you can do.
Right.
And I mean, we're sort of skirting by the obvious. I know we'll probably get into it, but it's like, black coaches are just naturally going to have a very different relationship. They're not going to, the level of support that they're going to get from the old white men who are boosters, it's not going to be the same as somebody like Mack Brown who, you know,
right.
is going to be hanging out at the same country clubs with him.
Right. Well, Mack figured it out, right? Like, I've talked about this, I think, with Spencer. Mm-hmm. First thing Mack did when he got to Austin is he hired Joe Jamail as his lawyer, right? Yeah. Hire the richest man nearby. Hire the biggest swanging thing that's around here. And that really did save his job when it was a little dicey early.
Oh,
right?
Incredible power move.
Right. Yeah. And by the way, it's crazy that they were getting ready to fire him for what was superior to the previous guy. But it was just like, yo, this should be better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is that Texas was, even in those early days, like the Chris Sims era, I know you're, right. You're not Chris Sims fan, like, is that right?
I have calmed down.
I don't want to bring up some ugly times.
Yeah, I've calmed down.
Okay. They were clearly better than they had been in like the previous 20 years, but losing to OU in those waves was like really embarrassing. It's the same sort of thing that gets you, you know, that gets coaches fired all the time. They got Les Miles fired at LSU. They got, who was a homeboy?
Well, John Cooper.
Cooper. Oh,
John
he
Cooper, got longer than he should have, but yeah. This is what got him fired.
Yeah, right. Losing to your rival and losing to your rival in that way will get you fired. But Mac Brown was able to hold on because of that relationship.
Yep, and that one is where it gets crucial, and that's why I say with Strong, Steve Patterson, who was the AD for about 15 minutes, and in that time hired Charlie Strong and Shaka Smart, right?
Right.
But he didn't run it by the boosters. It was clear that they were not involved in this discussion. And what you had basically was, I won't say a booster mutiny when Charlie got the job, mm-hmm. but wasn't everybody like, hey, this is our new coach and we're behind him. It was a lot of, we don't know this dude. Let's see. Which can never be the way that you start with your coach.
I mean, what was it? Red McCombs had said, well, I think he'd make a fine offensive coordinator.
Defense coordinator,
But like a head coach don't know about it.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve Patterson is bad. I mean, I admire the idea that he was able to try to hire those two dudes at that institution. Cause if you're from Texas, and I mean, man, we had to get into why you're a UT fan someday, but if you hire two black coaches at that institution in Texas, that is a very bold and courageous move.
Yes.
But like,
he didn't do it right.
Yeah, he didn't do it right. And people forget Steve Patterson is a dude who almost ran Hakeem Olajuwon off the Rockets.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
He's a pro sports guy.
Yeah, he's a pro sports dude. Yeah.
Yeah. And to answer your question, dude who went to high school would play for Texas. And so like, it kind of goes.
That's how that, okay.
Yeah, it kind of goes from there.
Okay.
And look, man, if you from Texas and you going to root for something local, you ain't got a lot of great options here in terms of history.
That's true. Well, so I grew up a U of H fan.
Yeah, and that makes more sense.
Yeah,
right? But
right.
See, you're from a part of the city where that feels more like home,
right.
To you, right? Like that's more local to your existence.
Right, right. I went to I went to kindergarten at TSU's like
right.
development lab. So I'm right over in there,
right.
Third ward.
And you're just enough older than me that there's some things that you can have a recollection of that I don't.
Like Fast Slam and Jamma.
Yeah, I don't have any recollection of college. And we weren't even in Houston at that time. But I don't have any recollection of that sort of thing. Like Houston meant something different at that time than it did. But like, yo, you know, why do you root for Texas? What I'm going to do? Root for Texas A&M.
Okay, this is confusing because we talk about how, like, you thought Georgetown was a black college.
Yes.
I kind of thought Texas A&M was Mad Brothers back then.
Why? Based on the
Wrecking Crew
jerseys?
The Kente Club jerseys and the Wrecking Crew. Like, I was just like, what? You know, Quinn Corriott, all these cats.
Sam Adams.
Or Sam Adams. I'm like, well, I mean, they got a lot of brothers. And Greg Hill, he didn't seem like the kind of dude. Greg Hill, could you imagine him playing at the University of Texas?
At that time, it'd be a little tricky.
Yeah.
Right?
Jackie Sherrill, like, it just kind of seemed like they had a little bit of a different culture.
Well, that's the thing. The Jackie Sherrill era could lead you. I mean, Jackie Sherrill had Kevin Murray playing quarterback. Right.
Right. In the early 80s.
Yeah. So, yes, the Jackie Sherrill era might be able to trick you. But on the booster thing, like, I think that's where it is, though. Like, we've talked so much about this with regards to players. But the above board stuff that they're able to do really is about the coach market. And, like, what I say happened to Taggart was, they fired him because they wanted to.
Right.
Right? Like, it's not about, there's no logic to what will or will not get you fired, what will or will not help you keep your job.
Right.
It's a matter of, do these guys want you to be gone? And they are not here based on any logic.
Mm-hmm.
They are here because they got the money to be here.
Right, right. And it's hard to win. It's hard to win if you don't have their support, right? Like, if like, they don't have to say anything. They also don't have to do anything either. And that's like when you can see with Willie Taggart early on, it was going out of the way. Cause if you can't raise the money for that facility that they've been trying to get, you could tell very early that like there was not a lot of support for him in those suites.
Right.
And if you don't have that, it's just, I can't think of a coach who has succeeded in spite of the fact that their boosters are like, only kind of halfway in on them. You know what I mean?
Can't be done. And by the way, I always say this with Saban down there. And me and Spencer talk about this all the time, and people think we're exaggerating, but we're not. Let them go 10-2 this year, and the seat gets hot.
You think so, man?
It don't matter who it is.
He lost three games
in 2010, and they won, and they won the national championship the next year.
That's true.
If they had, if they had gone 10-3 and then gone 10-3, he would have been on a blazing hot seat.
You think it, even at this point, after all of this,
it don't matter what you did. This is about what it is that you gonna do.
That's fair point.
That's how that place goes. And see, the thing with Saban is, it sounds like they've kind of insulated him from having to deal with all the boosters and everything that comes from it. But what that means is that their affection for him is conditional.
Right.
And once the condition doesn't come through, because look, here's something I think people need to get. Alabama still got this thing rolling, but you're going to look at the recruiting list for this year. Clemson has 6 5 stars.
Oh my God.
So far. So that's like 6 of the top 30 players in the country, basically.
Right.
They have 6 of them. Alabama got 3. Right, and there have been years Alabama was bringing in 5, 6, 7 somewhere in there.
I mean, I think they were the top. They had the top ranked recruiting class for like 7, 8 years in a row up until recently.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, once people look at that and they're like, "Yo, the recruiting's starting to slip."
Well, you mentioned this the other day.
At Saban.
It doesn't take long for things to get wobbly. Yeah, you know what I mean. Like you, all of a sudden, it can be over just like that.
Right.
Nobody thought Mac Brown was going to fall apart like that after 2009.
Nope.
You see Garrett Gilbert come in, have a good half. You're like, okay, maybe something's gonna come up. Nah, it can run off the rails that quickly. And you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, you're right, because Nick Saban is like not the kind of person that would engender like those sort of like warm feelings of a dude like Bear Bryant. Like he's not an icon there. Like he is a great coach and everybody respects him as such, but like there's not going to be the sort of hagiography.
Yes.
Over that.
Like their identity is not tied to him like it is to Bryant.
Right.
Right. Like this is what you can provide.
Right.
Right. And then the booster class at Alabama becomes interesting in terms of talking about coaches and stuff like that. Cause number one, the most important man with anything to do with that is Paul Bryant Jr.
Yes.
Do you know what Paul Bryant Jr. does now? Mm. He owns a bank.
Oh man.
He owns a bank.
Oh man.
Think about that for a second.
Oh my God.
He owns a bank, right? And like the booster class at Alabama is so powerful that they can shut down what happens at UAB.
Right.
Because they think it's a threat to what's going on.
I mean,
at
Jimbo, man.
Yes.
I mean, that's like, they thwarted Jimbo.
Yeah, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but for those who didn't hear it or are unfamiliar with this story, in 2007, Alabama Birmingham wanted to hire Jimbo Fisher as their head coach. He's the offensive coordinator at LSU at the time, and he was down to go, and the legislature and the board were like, nope, this is not going to work. We got a couple theories as to why it didn't happen. One theory has been, well, maybe Jimbo was going to be Saban's offensive coordinator, and that's why they shut it down. The other theory has been, if UAB has a coach that's better than Alabama's coach, because Alabama didn't have a coach at the time, if they get one that's better than Alabama's coach, that's going to be a bad look,
right?
And we don't want that. And so we're going to shut this down. And that's all booster activity, man.
Well, I mean, not only that, UAB had to shut down its program. Don't think the Alabama boosters didn't have something to do with, like, they've never wanted UAB.
No, when UAB got it started, Bryant said, why do they need a football program? They got
right.
us.
Right.
Like, they don't see them, that program does not see itself as simply representing the school.
Right.
They see themselves as representing the whole state.
The whole state, right. And so it's just like, I mean, it was possible for UAB to go away because UA wanted them to go away. And it's the same reason you talked about earlier, that University of Houston has so much trouble getting footing in Texas, because Texas and them are like, hey man, like, we don't want you guys. Like, there's no need for you to be any good.
No, and they got that want to.
Right.
That's the thing about, like, we grew up in the era of the Southwest Conference.
Man.
Like, we are aware of the Southwest Conference. Let's go through everybody that got thrown on probation out of the Southwest Conference.
7 of the 9
yes.
schools. And you know who the two that weren't on probation?
What, Texas and Rice?
No. Arkansas and Rice.
Arkansas avoided it,
yeah.
I didn't know Texas got caught.
Yeah,
up.
Texas got caught, but like on some minor stuff. You know what I mean? But like, yeah, Arkansas and Rice were the only two that didn't get caught up in that era, which is just sort of, you know, indicative of the want to in Texas.
Well, did you see the 30 for 30 they did on SMU?
Oh my God. That's one of my favorites.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But what they described, and I think it was Skip who talked about this, is what you had to understand was that the culture of it was these offices in Dallas with the oil dudes, because crude was booming, right? Like the 80s were a great time for oil prices. And it was all these guys coming in on Monday morning in those offices with all this money to blow.
Yeah.
And the competition among them is what brought really that era of the Southwest Conference and coming around. They almost shut the doors completely on TCU. They shut the doors completely on SMU. Baylor was a top 10 team in the middle of the 80s. You knew what that meant.
Right.
U of H, they always trying to get down.
I mean, man, look, man, it don't take, you know, they're going to be in the game one way or another. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Jackie Sherrill, got caught. Anytime A&M's been good, the NCAA has shown up.
There's a crime going on. But I say that, I'm not being this to be a hater, but I always say, like, when Baylor is good.
Oh, come on, man.
I was like, they can't do that. Have people been to Waco? You know what I mean? Like, I was like, they only can be good with something bad.
Some level of shenanigans.
Right,
right?
Yeah, right.
Like, either we bankrolling this or we're just turning our head away at a whole bunch of stuff.
We just letting them in. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on down.
I ain't heard nothing.
Right, yeah.
I ain't seen nothing that you did. I'm trying to think who else. Wait, Texas Tech got on probation?
Oh, yeah, man. But you know Texas Tech cheat too, man?
Yeah.
They did.
That's how we'll put it.
Right.
Seven of the nine. And these dudes just want it. It's so they can walk around amongst their partners and be like, yo, not only is my school balling, but I did this.
Right. But that want to and that and whatever, though, can be ultimately destructive, as you saw. And, like, I wonder, like, at what point there's going to be a tipping point in the Southeast Conference with all this want to, all these different schools that are competing, you know, all these boosters that are, like, desirous of having top 10, top 5 programs. That doesn't seem sustainable long term to me.
Well, because it's unsustainable for all of them to be top 10, right?
Right.
Like, top 10 only got 10.
Right.
You know, and that becomes the issue. And so you wind up with the school. So the thing about the SEC that gets lost, there are 14 schools in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them that will never win the SEC.
Ooh,
that have no chance.
Hold on. I'm trying to count now. Okay, so that's Vanderbilt?
Yes.
That's Kentucky?
Yes.
South Carolina?
Yes.
Two
of them in the same state.
Oh, the Mississippi State.
Yes.
But wait a minute. But they almost did.
That's all I gotta say. That's right. You saw as good as it's gonna get.
So it's either gonna be Arkansas or Missouri as the other one.
Oh, I'm sorry. 7.
Okay.
Not 6. 7.
Okay, so Arkansas, Missouri?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Because keep in mind, Missouri's best chance to do it was when they could still recruit Texas.
Right.
Right.
Missouri should have taken it. They should have gone on to the Big Ten, man.
That's what they wanted. The Big Ten just didn't want them.
Right.
They're a much better fit in the Big Ten.
Right. They wanted that going back as far as the 90s, too.
Yes. Well, the thing about that conference realignment as related to the Big Ten that I think gets lost for people is that the Big Ten is the only athletic conference that is also a brand name to academics.
Yes.
Every single Big Ten school is an academic heavy hitter of some variety.
Mm-hmm.
None of the SEC schools, other than Missouri, and you could say Vanderbilt, maybe. Like, people don't view them in that same way. Texas, the Big 12, really only Texas and kind of sort of. Well, Texas A&M ain't there no more.
Yeah.
And Texas A&M kind of sort of in the SEC.
Right.
But it's really Texas and kind of sort of Oklahoma.
I guess, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Like that people really, like that professors.
Well, this is why Texas has been for years, even dating back to the late 80s, early 90s, has been trying to align themselves with the Pac-12. Or it wants the Pac-10.
Right.
They've always wanted, because they like that academic association. They want to be with that. They know that they don't have as much in common with the schools and their regional footprint. But
right.
It's just a very difficult thing to work out. And they have in Texas, speaking of boosters, they have these obligations to these other programs that, you know, the state legislators will not, they just won't allow them to leave.
Correct.
Leave them behind.
Yeah. And this is going to be thinking more like with boosters, and we talk about this, is that when you got a school that ain't supposed to be good, all you gotta have is one, right? Like one guy who decides, now we gonna do this. Boone Pickens was the guy at Oklahoma State.
People don't understand that Oklahoma State had been bad or a mediocre program for most of our life. With the exception of like that Jimmy Johnson era. But like Boone Pickens, if you've never been to Stillwater, Oklahoma, I can't explain to you how remote it is. One time I drove up there and there was a coyote on the highway in the middle of the day. Like that is how remote, how far away it is. And Boone Pickens basically built a franchise in Stillwater, Oklahoma. And that's how powerful he was.
And he found the coach that wanted to be there,
mm-hmm.
right? In Mike Gundy, they got an alum.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to know what the overall record is in the Bedlam series?
Oh my God. We should also give credit to Les Miles, because Les Miles.
Yeah, he won those two games that I can't believe they won.
Yeah.
Right? Like that 0-1 and 0-2 game where you just look at it and you're like, oh my God.
He talked a little too much in 0-3 and it got him hurt next year.
That was the wrong team to be going up against and talking about. All right. So from 1946 to 1964, Oklahoma State didn't win a single game that series. And then they won two and bless their hearts. And then they went out there and they lost 9 in a row. And then they won one. And then they went out there and they lost. Wow, I can't even count this. So basically between 94 and 77 and 94, Oklahoma State pulled off a tie.
Wow.
A tie.
You know who, I mean, think about it. That's the Jimmy Johnson, Barry Sanders, Thurman Thomas era of Oklahoma State,
yes.
too, by the way.
Yes.
That's just happening too. They get stomped.
And those weren't great Oklahoma teams like 88, 89, 90. No, they still out there beating Oklahoma State.
Wow.
And so Boone Pickens is like, yo, no. I have all the money in the world. Now, granted, he gives money to other stuff too.
Right.
Right? I mean, gave rather. But no, this man's like, I want my school to be good at football.
Right. And again, the other farm school in this equation, for instance, is Texas A&M.
Yes.
Like, they have a crazy booster class. I mean, man, Tony Busby, who's running for the mayor of Houston right now, I mean, they are ridiculous. They've come up with money for anything. I mean, that's why Jimbo Fisher is being paid what he's paid right now. Texas A&M has an insane amount of want to. They mm-hmm. want to be so good, and they spend so much money, and it just really, like, you kind of see in college football that, like, there's a cap, though, on programs. And it makes it really difficult. Even if your boosters want you there, it can be really difficult.
Yeah, and it's all fun and games for A&M as long as the crude price is riding high.
Yeah.
That's the thing with their booster class is that the Jimbo's money, that crude price is riding high. That crude price falls, everything changes because that's where the money for the booster class is coming from is oil.
Right, right. But, man, has A&M's not been bad in our lifetime, though? Have they? Have they ever been bad?
Not, like, bad.
Not like 4-8 bad.
Yeah, they're not abject.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, Slocum never had a bad team. Your man, Fran Jody. Fran Jody.
Coach Fran, what's up, man?
Yeah, man, that's your guy.
What's up, man?
I get the feeling that you liked him.
I felt bad for him because I thought Alabama overwhelmed him, mm-hmm. and he would say that. And then he got to A&M, and I thought there really was some promise for him there, and it just kind of fell apart for him. I think he's like, I don't often think that coaches care about their players. I thought that Coach Fran did sort of care, like, you know, as much mm-hmm. as a coach can care. You
right.
know what I mean? And so I felt bad for him. I thought he kind of, I don't think he got a raw deal. I think, you know, it was what it was.
And he had 1-4-8 year.
Yeah, that last one. Was that the first one? Oh, really?
It was that year they lost 77-0 to Oklahoma when Oklahoma literally could have scored 120 points.
I was at that game. I covered that game.
Really?
Yeah. And I the funny thing I wrote in the game story, I was like, if A&M had 12 players on the field, they still would have lost. You know what I mean? Like, if they really had the 12 men out there, they would have got beat that day.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. It was surreal to see a FBS program as proud as A&M lose like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was ridiculous.
Let me tell you another booster level with this stuff that I think is interesting is a program like Miami.
Ooh.
That
Evan Shapiro, what's up?
Yeah, but they don't have that much want to.
Yeah.
They're willing to be good, but they don't really have the want to.
They think that, like, they don't have to do that. Don't you think it must be that they just think, oh, we have location in terms of, like, just the location of the campus and the location of the recruits.
Yeah.
Like, it should sort of sell itself because they don't even have the facilities.
Right. But the other part was when they got it early, they mm-hmm. weren't expecting it.
Right.
Right. Like, they didn't think it was going to come, and they really didn't think it was going to come the way that it came.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Like, they did not think the program, they thought the championships are good for the brand. Right. They did not think the program was good for the brand. But what that means now is the people that care the most about Miami football are those former players.
Oh,
and
yeah.
they got to, and then trying to figure out how to balance that.
Yeah.
Is a tricky game for them.
Well, I mean, like, the thing is, yeah, those guys, they only have but so much influence. They have the want to, but, like, they don't necessarily have the capital.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's always this tension, and you can see whenever Miami is bad, looking at Luther Campbell's, Twitter account is something, boy. And he got a whole bunch of ideas about what they can be doing, but that ain't got nothing to do with building nice indoor facilities, having an on-campus stadium, all the things that you would want for a program of its caliber in tradition, but they just can't, for whatever reason, they just can't do it. You
right.
know?
I would love to know more about, like, the booster class at BYU.
Oh.
Like, we talked about the shutdown forecast yesterday, and we're like, so who, wonder if they have, anybody over there is down to slide a little dough. under the table to make it happen.
I mean, the thing is, it's kind of difficult. They just got to convince people to go.
Yes.
That's the thing. I mean, that's a problem for a lot of colleges, especially that one.
Yeah.
Cause there was a dude from Eric Dickerson's hometown that went to school there. And I remember thinking, I was like, man, is that dude Mormon or what? You know, what's going on? He lasted like a semester.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's a very difficult sell.
I just feel like the best perk, perhaps, at least in the mind of an 18-year-old of being a college football player, BYU is actively trying to prevent. They are actively interfering with.
They'll run you up out of there over it.
Yeah.
I mean, they got rid of one of their 6 foot.
Yeah.
You know, their basketball.
Yes,
dude.
They did.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched The Last Waltz? Great line in The Last Waltz, mm-hmm. where Robbie Robinson was talking about they were going to play with Ronnie Hawkins' band, mm-hmm. and Ronnie told him, and I quote, "You're not going to make much money, but." And that's kind of the sale of college football.
Right.
Right. Like that's kind of what college football is offering. And BYU was like, nah, not even that.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, so many programs say that. I mean, that it's tacitly a part of the sales pitch. Right. And the only time I've ever heard of a guy say it out loud was allegedly Kendall Briles. Which just show you how wild the Briles family is. The only time anybody's been like, hey, man, you come down here, we're going to take care of you. But that governs a lot of like who can be good and who's not going to be good, unfortunately. But 18-year-old boys, you know?
Yep. So we got like UCLA is a school that they got the academic restriction.
I was just going to say about USC, man. Because USC, like, I mean, you would think they've got the money, they've got the booster class. What is it? The thing about USC is that really, in my lifetime, USC is sort of similar to Texas to me in that the expectations for the program are all much higher than the results have been. USC has had that one run in my lifetime with Pete Carroll.
Yes.
Outside of that, they're like a 9-3 program.
Yeah, overall, well.
Unless you go back to the 70s.
Yeah, well, what.
John Robinson.
Right, but what they are is a program that did its best work when the Southern programs weren't recruiting black people.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
This is like Ohio State in the 80s had a long run where they were a 9-win program. And even under Cooper, by and large, except for that run in the middle of his time, they were basically a 9-win program. And then when Tressel got there, they weren't a 9-win program, but the results were fairly predictable, that national championship notwithstanding. And then Urban was like, yo, I'm going to the South to get players.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, okay, we got it.
Florida, Texas.
Yeah.
Getting all those cats.
Yeah, like that was it. Like, yo, man, Ohio is not – they barely recruit Ohio anymore.
Oh, yeah. They're a national – I mean, I always am like – oh, man, it feels like for like the last 4 or 5 years, Ohio State's had some dude from Missouri City. And I'm just like, they didn't used to recruit down there when I was in the 90s. When David Boston went there, that was really like, oh, I didn't even know they were checking for people down
How
here like that.
How in the world does Texas not get David Boston?
Man, David Boston's a different cat, though.
David Boston is probably, of my time in Houston, the best athlete that the city produced.
So David Boston in his senior year was also – was he the basketball player of the year too? I think he was.
I don't know if he was basketball player of the year, but
he was on the first team.
But he hit the shot that sent him to the state semis.
Right, and he was. I don't know why I did that. I actually went to the school who was the Houston area player of the year. But
was it Mike?
Mike
LeBlanc.
Yeah, Mike LeBlanc. Shout out Mike. He was first team all city, or first team all area in basketball.
Yes.
In a major, and then he was the Houston area player of the year in football.
At quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah. He went to Humble.
He went to Humble, man. Yeah, I mean, which is when Humble used to be like a pretty good program, David Boston, man. I'll never forget going to watch him at the Astrodome in the playoffs, and I went with my boy, and he got a scholarship to go play a receiver at another school, and he was like, man, I'm as good as David Boston, and we that next play, like David Boston did something that just like, you know, I was like, are you serious, man? Look, are you looking at this dude? I was like, you tripping right now.
Now, yeah. I ask you this about when you were at TCU. You didn't have the booster interaction, but did you see it?
Yeah, because, like, it depended on, like, off-season jobs you might be able to get, the relationships that people had after games, like the people that, you know, that, like, LaDainian would talk to, or, you know, Max Nakia. I'm trying to think of who our quarterbacks, like Jeff Dover. Like, those dudes, they had relationships and talked with those dudes, and you would see them, you know. You know, they'd be at the, our workouts or whatever, because we had a thing called Night of the Champions. And so they'd be there. They'd be there just to watch us, like, work out. You know what I mean? Which I thought was
a little weird.
A little weird, yeah. But they were always sort of like a presence. You know, I didn't necessarily have conversations with them or whatever, but you would know, you could see that, hey, maybe a guy got a pretty good internship at this place. If they were interested in that sort of thing.
Right.
If you weren't interested, then they weren't offering. But also TCU at that time was just a really different place when I was there. Like, it wasn't the, It was not the program then that it is today.
Well, Gary gave him a different one, too, because Gary told him what was possible.
Yeah, yeah. And also, shout out Coach Fran, man. Coach Fran came in and was like, oh, like, you guys ain't even lifting weights right, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just a big – like, he upgraded everything, and then Gary was able to sort of take it over and, like, and really take it to that next level. But when I was at TCU, just to give you an indication of how bad things were – we had our locker room. We had to walk a half mile to our practice field. We had to cross a major street, and it was like up a dirt hill or whatever. Something like, and I'm like, that's like, people don't do that now. Like, now you would take, you go from the locker room, you walk right upstairs, and the practice field is right mm-hmm. there. But back then, it was just like, you know, there are some high schools today that had better facilities than TCU had in the 90s.
And the boosters are the ones that make that happen.
Yeah, right. That's right. I mean, because they were like, oh, they see that it's viable, and they start to pitch in and, you know, spend a little money. And it's like, okay, there you go.
You know, if these cats ain't giving the money, this stuff doesn't happen. The thing is, that means you got to listen to them.
Well, man, think about what SMU must have done. They must have ran their guys. I mean, they had to have run their guys off.
They had no choice.
Yeah. I mean, has anybody talked to Sherwood Blunt?
He has stayed low.
I've never even seen an interview with him.
I've never seen an interview with him either. Right. But what's funny about it is when it came out, he was making a play that people make all the time in doing all of this. He played it to become Craig James' agent. That's the part that gets lost in
this.
That's
a good point.
As Craig James swears he didn't take a dime, Sherwood Blunt is your agent.
Like, right.
Okay, buddy.
Right, yeah. It's like, I'm sure that relationship just happened.
Like, look, he giving money to everybody else, and he ain't giving money to you, and you signed with him? that's the guy that's looking out for you?
Right.
Okay, Craig.
Right. I mean, man, Craig, man.
Okay. And it's gonna, I mean, as the money changes, too, it's like the generation of who the money changes, this is all going to be very, very interesting to watch how it goes.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm going to be real curious to see, like, the thing is, it's going to depend heavily on – for this next generation, like, which schools are willing to invest enough to keep up with the Joneses? So I think about a school like, there's going to be a whole class of schools like USF and all these schools, like, they're going to have to make a decision, like, where are we going to go? Are we really willing to stay up there? And is Florida going to allow you to be there with them? And I just don't think that.
Well, that's where it gets fun, right? Because we're dealing with the next generation of schools.
Yes.
I think that gets lost. Like, these commuter schools that then decided they wanted to have big time programs is basically, in the 60s and 70s, you wind up with this huge demand for higher education spurred largely by the Vietnam War,
mm-hmm.
right? And then so you got the GI Bill that's getting guys home after World War II in Korea, and then you have that. And then you got Vietnam where people are trying to not go to war, therefore they're putting more people into school and everything else. And so now you have a, like, those U blank Fs or F blank Us, they're so big. They're all like 50-something thousand students. FAU, FIU, UCF, USF. All those schools are giant, and one of them is going to be University of Houston, where you get yourself a booster class that's like, oh, no.
We
going to make this happen right here.
Isn't that UCF? That's UCF.
I think they're up there. Like, USF has demonstrated at points that they could beat that school.
USF, their only problem is that, again, their booster class is broke as hell.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Tampa's not an area. I lived in Tampa for 4 years. That's not an area with a lot of money, a lot of industry. And to the extent that it existed is in the tourism industry.
Yeah. Wow.
You know what I mean?
Who's going to Tampa for tourism?
Hey, man, St. Pete, the beaches and all that.
Okay,
it's kind of nice.
Okay.
Yeah,
I never would have thought of such a thing.
Yeah, man. It does have that. There are people that if you don't want to spend a lot of money going to Miami, you can go to Tampa.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's fair. But they got to get the right rich people.
Right.
You know, like I say, Houston is demonstrated. They'll do whatever.
Houston has everything too. Like, they have every industry, and they have all kinds of classes of rich people. Like, the biotech, medical industry, petrochemical industry. They've got everything that you need in place.
Right.
The issue is, like, is Texas and Texas A&M going to allow it to happen?
And as the University of Houston will tell you, the answer is no.
Right. Right. There's no, I mean, I'm a TCU alum. I love my school, but there's no reason that they should be in the Big 12 or University of Houston.
Mm-mm.
If you think about it.
Mm-mm. None whatsoever.
Right.
There's no logic to it. TCU doesn't fit the profile of the conference.
Right.
None of it. There's no logic except we think we can still be good even with them around.
Right. The Southwest Conference broke up because of schools like TCU. You know what I mean? Like, it was like Texas and Texas A&M were tired of sharing, like, revenue with these schools. They're just like, you guys bring nothing to the table.
Right.
We don't need you for the Dallas market. You know what I mean? Like, nobody, like, when people talk about, like, oh, well, they brought in TCU for the Dallas or Fort Worth market.
That's not
people
how it
there
works.
Don't care about them, man.
That's not how it works.
Yeah, right, right. They, like, be third or fourth in the pecking order.
Yeah, like, SMU maybe.
Right.
Could have given you that.
Right.
Maybe. But no.
People also don't know that, like, Dallas and Fort Worth, even though they call it the DFW area, they're not really close or the same.
They're not at all.
They're
not at all. I think they're more similar than Dallas wants to acknowledge, but they're not the same. Dallas and all that fake money.
Dallas is Atlanta.
Oh, no. The difference in Atlanta, though, the cats who say they got money in Atlanta actually do have money, right? The thing with Dallas is the money ain't real. The money is fictitious.
You don't think, I thought that was backwards. I always thought of Atlanta as a place where people pretend they got money.
Well, to be fair, there's that. But I tell you, there's difference between Houston and money, and Houston and Dallas.
Oh.
Houston move on cash. Dallas move on credit.
There you go. I feel that.
You see what I'm saying?
No, absolutely.
Like Dallas, Dallas. Remember this, Dallas used to do more plastic surgery business than L.A.
Oh, man, that's a good point.
That tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
About the way they get down. But, hey, that's my man, Joel Anderson.
Check out
Slow Burn Podcast on Slate. I've been rolling through it. Got through the first two episodes. Digging it greatly.
Appreciate you, man.
And the second episode is kind of sort of about Texas.
Yeah, man. Look, man, for people that don't know about South Park in Houston, man, If you know about that area, it'll resonate with you, like what was going on there and how that all went down with Ronald Ray Howard. It's a really interesting case, and I'm glad we got a chance to look into it.
All right, man. Well, you guys go check that out. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsors, Bowling Branch, as well as Lightstream. Also, thank you to Joel Anderson and the rest of our contributors to the Sideline series. Thanks to Spencer Hall, Marcus Spears, and Stephen Godfrey. We did that collaboration with Banner Society, so we appreciate all their help with that one. Be sure to check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Her dog. This week, Mina chats with Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders about week 12 in the NFL. Download and subscribe to the Mina Kimes Show. Also, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.